You are listening to the Stetson Students Podcast, where we post all of the series and messages from our student ministry. We are a ministry connected to Stetson Baptist Church, where we are for DeLand and for Jesus. If you would like to learn anything more about our ministries, please check out our social medias or go to StetsonBaptistChurch.org.
Going on last time, but I am Nate. I'm over the student ministry here. I'm just so glad and blessed that you are here with us tonight. I want to start with asking you a question. Who in here would say, I love video games? Anybody? Okay. Yeah, so, all right. So, who in here would say, you know what, I partake in video games every once in a while? Maybe. Okay, some of you. Here, I want to prove something. I want to prove that if not every person in the room, most of every person in the room has played some video games and enjoys video games in a lot of ways. And I'm going to do that by showing you a few video games. And I just want you to throw out a woot. Can you say woot? If you're like, or maybe just a cheer, whatever way you want to make it known that you enjoy this video game. I'm going to start with one that I think a lot of us enjoy, and it's this. Right here. Oh, it's okay. Yeah. Woo. All right. Power Rangers are in Fortnite, by the way. You didn't know that. Spider-Man is also in Fortnite. I feel like that should be enough for everybody. All right. Some of you are very passionate about it. But hey, there's more video games to be seen. Next, we got this. All right. My college football people at. I've never played it, but I've heard it's really, really good. I've heard this one's very hard compared to the other ones. Alright, what's next? What do we have? What about that? Yeah? Everybody? Yeah? Come on. Hey. Real quick. Can I just tell you, I think it is, without a doubt, easy to say the hardest video game of all time. How do they expect us to do the moves that they're doing? It is an monstrosity that they try to make it like look like it's easy. It is not. All right. I am against Just Dance. Sorry, I just had to make that. I had to make that clear for you. All right. What's next? We got Hey, this is niche. This is niche. Remember this game? Y'all remember Club Penguin? Who here remembers Club Penguin? Anybody? Yeah. Dude, that's awesome. Club Penguin, back in the day. Alright, that one's a little more niche. Alright. Yeah. Hey. Y'all remember Matt from Wii Sports? Oh, dude, Matt was the worst. You can never beat Matt. Alright, what else? Hey, in our video game room, so that's always available for you to play. And I think last but not least, Angel Reese! 2K. Okay, let me tell you this. 2K was my jam. 2K was my jam. All right, let's reel it back in. 2K was my jam. I would play 2K all day back in high school, and then even some in college. 2K is, I think we can all agree, if you do play 2K, it is progressively getting worse. But back in the day, like 2K13 through 2K15, man, prime of life. One of my favorite things, let me tell you, me and my brother will still sometimes do this. I don't want to admit it, and my wife is probably embarrassed that I'm admitting this, but sometimes we will go and create 99 overall players and play a season, just me and him, and we just see who can win the most valuable player that year. It's always me, by the way. But one of my favorite things about 2K, and you can probably say this about a lot of video games and other games of the sorts, is that it has what's called a reset button. Basically, what that means is there is a way, if I'm ever playing bad Or for me, if I foul out of the game and like my character can't play anymore, I can literally reset the game where the game that I just played didn't count and I can redo it. I'm sure that's in all games, right? Like if you're doing really bad or you're losing or you lose on the last shot or you're not winning in Mario Kart or you're playing really bad on Wii Sport, whatever it is, you can quit the game and reset it. And basically, the decisions that you made, the bad choices, the mistakes, no matter what, have no effect because they've been erased. It's almost like it never happened in the first place. Why I'm telling you this is because if I were right, and I think I am, I think most of us, in a lot of ways, wish there was almost like a reset button in our life. Like there's things that we've done or ways that we've acted or days that we've had where we wish we could just say, I'm going to reset. I'm gonna push that reset button and restart that and restart that interaction, restart that choice, restart that day, restart that year. Whatever it is, we go, man, I wish that I could just erase those bad decisions. Maybe it's resetting a bad decision or resetting ourselves to get out of a season of anxiousness. Or maybe it's resetting words that we've said that have hurt a friend or have come back to bite us in the butt. Or maybe it's resetting a grade and you're like, man, I wish I would have just studied instead of trying to cheat. And now I got a zero and my mom and dad is mad at me and I'm grounded and I can't go out this weekend. Like we always think about, man, if we just had a reset button, how great would that be? Am I alone in that? Anybody else? Anybody else is like, man, I would use a reset button, right? Yeah. But sadly, the world doesn't work like that, right? Like there is no. I wish I could just pull out of my back pocket this reset button and be like, I'm selling it to you for $5.99, $14.99 shipping and handling. Wait, there's more. Yeah, y'all don't know what that is. Y'all don't have commercials anymore. Little infomercials. But no, truly, we wish that we could have a reset button. But the world and life doesn't work that way. Decisions do matter. And they do follow us. But what I want to sit here today with you and talk for the next 20 minutes is I want to tell you about a way that you can reset. And here's my promise. It's going to show up to you. If you're taking notes, oh, I didn't say this, but we have Bibles for you. And if you want a notepad, man, we ask you don't try to take notes on your phone. It's just a distraction to you and to those around you. So if you would like to take notes, we do have notepads. All you got to do is raise your hand and a leader will bring you a notepad and a pen just to write some notes down. We also have notebooks, so if it's like, man, I want to take notes ongoing, I want to keep them in the same area, man, feel free to take one of those home with you. But here's my promise, and so if you're taking notes, this is my promise to you that you might want to write down. I promise today to show you that you can reset in a way that matters. I promise to show you that you can indeed have that reset button, but maybe not the way that you think, maybe not the way that you would necessarily want, but in a way that I promise matters more than any way possible. So we're going to be in Acts 9. So if you don't mind, if you brought a Bible, awesome, feel free to use it. But if you did not, then we ask you, try not to use your phone for a Bible. It's just distractions. Notifications pop up. Now you're scrolling on Instagram or on Snapchat or whatever. So, man, we do have a Bible for you. It's in your seat, man. Just open up to Acts 9 if you don't mind. Acts 9. If you're wondering where Acts 9 is, it is in the New Testament, which is in the second half of your Bible. There is a table of contents in the front pages, so feel free to use that. I use it usually when I'm in the Old Testament. I still use that joker every once in a while. So it'll be right after the Gospels. A-C-T-S is what you're looking for. Acts 9. And we're picking up on, for some of you, maybe a familiar character in the Bible. His name is Saul, later turned into Paul. Paul wrote most of the Bible that we have today. And so I think he's somebody that we can look at his story because it is revolutionary the way that he walks into a reset that matters. We're actually picking up in the first verse. So if you're still flipping there, it's fine. I'm going to start and you can just catch up. It says this, "But Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues at Damascus, so that if he found anyone belonging to the way, men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem." Here's what I'm saying. So Saul is on this way, and really what's happening is he's going to a religious leader saying, hey, there's a new movement that's all about this guy named Jesus, and we need to put a stop to it. And so if you would just give me, basically, you would write this paper saying, I'm allowed to go and hunt down people of the way. When you think of the way is just the church. It is people and followers of Jesus who are getting together, and they literally called it the way because of the way that they acted was so different than the world. And so he says, I'm going to go get them and bring them bound back so that we can put them to death or put them in prison to stop them from spreading this Jesus guy. I want to split the room right here. Who in here, raise your hands if you like school. There we go. All right, now here we go. Raise your hand high if you're like, I hate school. All right. Hey, I'm with you there. That was me growing up. School was where I would be with my friends. That was about it. Once we entered into a time where somebody was talking at the front of the class, kind of like I am now, I would just turn off and tune out. I hope you're not doing that to me because I promise there's something good here. Let me tell you, the way that feeling that you have of hatred towards school, or for those who love school, find that hatred towards something. Maybe it's the dentist. Oh, anybody like the dentist? Oh, you're what's wrong with this world. No, I'm just kidding. Man, think about that, but times it by like a billion. That's where Saul is. That's where Saul is with the hatred. He is hating it so much that he's like, even if you think this Jesus guy is something to follow, you need to be put to death. And we know he's serious about this because the story before this, if you went and read it later, is him doing this exact same thing. He put somebody to death named Stephen for proclaiming the gospel. He literally was putting him to death, and he looked at the guys that were putting him to death, and he goes, whoa, hey, do you want me to hold your coat for you? Like, I think your coat's affecting your throwing arm as you're stoning that guy. Let me hold your coat so you can get better aim. That's who Saul was. He hated the church. He hated the growth of Christianity. I think this is really interesting and so cool, and we're going to talk about this later in the semester in a series called Can I Trust the Bible? I think Saul is a perfect story of why we should always look to the question, can I trust the Bible, with the answer of yes. Because a religion or a book that's trying to teach you something that says, man, what I say matters, would not make the main writer of the book this guy that you don't want to be like. Yet the Bible tells the truth about Saul and actually uses it in a great and mighty way, saying, hey, I know who he was, and all the more so I'm going to tell you about how bad of a person he was so that I can show you how transformational his change was and how great the love and growth of the gospel is going to happen through him. Pick up in verse 3. It says, now he went on his way, and he approached Damascus, and suddenly a light from heaven shone around him. And falling to the ground, he heard a voice saying to him, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And Saul answered, who are you, Lord? And he said, I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. But rise and enter the city, and you will be told what you are to do. So Saul in this moment is radically stopped. He was on his way to do the very thing that Jesus stops him to tell him not to do. I think that's very interesting because sometimes we think about our coming to faith in Jesus, maybe we look at it, and sometimes it happens in these softer moments. That's not what happens with Saul. Saul was in the very action of doing the thing against the Lord when he got called out. Saul later self-proclaimed, and as we'll see, others would agree, called himself the worst of sinners. Meaning, there is nothing I have done, there's nothing we have done or you can do that Saul is saying, I have not already done. Why is that important? Because, hear me say this, this may be the first thing you need to take away. You are never too far away from God to turn back to him. You could be in the very middle of something against him, and he will still call you and say, run back to me. That's what happens in Saul's story. And it turns into something beautiful. Pick it up in verse 8. It says, Saul rose from the ground, and although his eyes were open, he saw nothing. So they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus. And for 3 days, he was out without sight and neither ate nor drank. So Saul's in this moment. He gets met by Jesus. And Jesus' light was so great that it literally blinded him. It says he opened his eyes, but he couldn't see anything. And then he says he didn't eat for 3 days. This is what you would call a fast. It means putting something aside to focus on God. Now here's what I'm looking into the story as I'm thinking through Saul. I don't think Saul is in here in this moment thinking, you know what I need to do? I need to fast. Jesus just met me. I was thinking one way about it, and now I'm not. Now I'm thinking a different way. Maybe I should follow him. I'm going to fast. What I think was happening is in Saul's moment, he was guilt-ridden. Have you ever had that moment? Maybe it's like you got caught cheating on a test. Maybe it's like you got caught by your parents doing something they told you not to. And that, you know, that, oh, you know that uncomfortable conversation where somebody sits you down and goes, hey, I know something, but I want to give you the opportunity to tell me before I say it. Y'all know that feeling? What if in that moment somebody goes, you want a cookie too? You can't eat, right? You're like, you're sweat. You are just in this moment of internally thinking of, oh my goodness, I cannot believe I'm having this conversation. Man, I don't want to have this conversation. This conversation is coming. I can't eat. I don't know about you. I will never be able to snack in a moment like that. I think that's Saul here. Saul is looking at it and saying, I've literally put people to death for the same God that is now calling to me saying, you're wrong and they were right. So he's sitting here saying, man, I'm sure his buddies were like, dude, do you want a sandwich? And he's like, I can't. Maybe he tried, threw up a little bit. We don't know, but man, can you just imagine how Saul is feeling in this moment? He has just been told the very thing, the very God that you wanted to serve and were putting people to death because you thought they were against him, you were wrong and they were right. And you have made terrible mistakes. So right in this moment, we get kind of pulled out of Saul's story. We get introduced to another character. I'm just going to kind of talk to you about him. His name is Ananias. 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 Can you say Ananias?
Ananias.
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 All right, there you go. Now you got your first kid's name. Congratulations. So Ananias is this Christian leader. And there's a beautiful moment where God speaks to Ananias. Isn't that great? First off, I think sometimes because something's in the Bible, we just walk past it. This guy, and same thing happened with Saul, God spoke to them. God literally reached out to him in a voice. And he looks at Ananias and he says his name, he says, Ananias. Imagine God saying your name. Ananias. Fill in your name. You'd probably respond the same way that Ananias responds. He goes, here I am, Lord. Hey, I'm right here. What's up? What you need? I'm right here. Tell me about it. What's your plan? I know you're about to use me. You're not calling my name for nothing. What do you need from me? I'm here. I'm ready. Let's go. And he tells him to go get Saul. He tells him to go get Saul. Let's see how Ananias responds. Remember, he was just so bold and ready. And this is how he responds to being asked to go and get Saul. Lord, I've heard from many about this man, how much evil he has done to your saints at Jerusalem. And here he has the authority from the chief priest to bind all who call on your name. Paraphrase, God, you're crazy. You've made a mistake. God, I don't think you are saying what you mean to say. Like, obviously there's something got messed up. Maybe you're talking about a different Saul. Hey, his name's not Paul yet. Maybe you went a little bit too far back in the past. You're looking for somebody else. You don't want him. Because if I go and get him, he will A, kill me, and B, kill many others that are for you. Let's stop back in. It says, but the Lord said to him, talking about Ananias, go. For he is a chosen instrument of mine to carry my name before the Gentiles and kings and the children of Israel. For I will show him how much he must suffer for the sake of my name. Paraphrase. No, Ananias. He's exactly who I want. Hey, tell me, Ananias, tell me all those things that he's done. Tell me about, give me a list of everything that Saul has done because I'm going to show you that those reasons are the very reason that I am choosing him to spread my gospel. And I sure not wrong about what he's done. You're exactly right. And that is the reason we need him. Because I, God, am about to completely reset him and the trajectory of his life. So this exact thing happens. Ananias listens to God. And he goes and he finds Saul. And he actually heals Saul. So Ananias puts his hand on Saul, and it says that things like scales fell from his eyes, and his sight is restored. And then immediately after that, Saul then goes and is trained by the disciples. I think there's a quick, really cool thing that we can learn here in the midst of this all. So Saul realizes, I was wrong, I need to be trained. So what does he do? He goes and finds other Christians to be trained by. Why do I think that's important? I think sometimes we look at our faith like we need to walk it alone. When Saul's a perfect example of why, in the midst of our faith, in the midst of our growing, we need to do it with others. Where can you do that? In a church. And I would love for Stetson to be a home for you on Wednesday night, on Sunday morning, whatever. But man, I just want you to get plugged into somewhere where you are not walking the faith alone. Because we need each other to grow. Make sense? Cool. Thank you. All right. Let's see how the story ends, and then let's see where the takeaway we can get from it is. So he's trained by the disciples, and then it says this. Immediately, Paul proclaimed Jesus in the synagogues, saying, "He is the Son of God." And all who heard him were amazed and said, "Is this not the man who made havoc in Jerusalem of those who called upon this name? And has he not come here for this purpose, to bring them bound before the chief priest?" But Saul increased all the more in strength and confounded the Jews who lived in Damascus by proving that Jesus was the Christ. Man, immediately, I love that word, immediately, meaning Saul was trained and immediately said, "I now have a new mission. I'm going to go make Jesus known." My favorite part about it, he didn't run from the places of which he was guilty of bashing Jesus' name. That was the very place he ran to. It says he ran back into the synagogues, so much so that people were asking, like, "Hey, wasn't he just here last week doing the exact opposite? Wasn't it his very purpose? Like, didn't he just talk to us about how he was about to go get permission from the chief priests to bring Christians bound? And now he's preaching about Jesus." In a sense, it would be like, "Hey, wasn't this Saul the same one that was in my classroom last week using inappropriate language and joking in the back and making fun of the teacher? Or, hey, wasn't this the same sibling that was right next to me when mom or dad asked him to do the dishes and they just scoffed and ran to the room and said some mean things or made lies about me? Or isn't this the same friend that was just bashing the other friend's name behind their back?" That's what Saul is saying. He is in this moment saying, "I'm not going to run from who I was. I'm going to embrace those moments. I'm going back to the same people who maybe have seen me at my worst, and I'm going to show them what a reset really looks like." Man, I think Saul's story is so impactful for many reasons. But tonight we have this word reset, and so this is what I want us to take away from Saul's story, because we see it in the life of Saul, and it's this. Reset only happens when you meet Jesus. That reset button that we've always wanted, it exists. But it only happens when we meet Jesus. And like I said, it may not look exactly how we thought it would. But it's a reset in a way that matters. It's a reset that looks like this. It's a reset that maybe it's your guiltiness that Jesus resets into innocence. Maybe it's your anxiousness that when you meet Jesus, it is reset into peace. Or maybe it is bondage or enslavement to a certain sin that you just can't stop doing. But when you meet Jesus, it is reset into freedom. Or maybe it's stress over a class or stress over a potential girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. Stress over a breakup that Jesus can reset into rest. Or maybe it's a hurt from a friend of somebody saying something behind your back or doing something against you that gets to be reset into the strength to forgive them. Or the anger at a moment or a situation that you get to be reset into joy, or even a hatred for somebody or something that you can be reset when you meet Jesus back into a sense of love. How do we know this is true? Because Saul. again, we can ring true with Saul, the worst of sinners. The worst of the worst. Nothing we can do that we can look at Paul or Saul and say, did you do that? And he answers, no, I didn't do that. He's going to look back at us and say, man, I was in the pits with you. I did exactly that. I was on my way to maybe do worse. Yet I met Jesus. Radically, my story was reset. I think something's really cool right now for you all, for your lives. So you all just started school, what, last week? Last week, right? So we're on our second week of school. How are we feeling about it? Yeah, a little bit? So I think something probably happened to you that happened to me, that happened to your parents, that happened to your friends, that happened to you, everybody. You probably, in some way, shape, or form, maybe not drastically, maybe in a small way, walked into this school year saying, I was this way last year, and I'm going to be this way this year. Let me put that into point. I was doing something last year, but this year I don't want to do it that way. I would like to be known in a different way. Again, that might be drastic. Maybe for you it's like, man, I was a totally different personality, and I just don't want to be that way anymore. I want to be somebody new this year. Maybe it's small. Maybe it's a grade. Like, hey, I was a C student last year, and I just want to get up to a B student this year. Maybe it's a sport, man. I didn't have any hobbies last year or any sports, or I didn't make the team last year, but I want to do it this year. You're in a really cool moment because you're still there. And maybe you've been successful in the last week of doing whatever you want to do differently. Maybe you have. What's cool is we can use this moment, but it's not exclusively this moment. You can be reset in a way that matters. This does not mean that, hear me say this, when I say meet Jesus, I'm not saying, hey, when you're saved, that's it. No, no, no. You who are saved or not saved, you can meet Jesus at all times. Man, if you have never met Jesus, I would invite you today to meet him for the first time. But say that you're like, Nate, I do have a faith. I am saved. I feel like I know I've met Jesus before. That doesn't mean you can't do it again. Let him reset your life. You might be asking how, and I promise in the next 3 weeks as we continue to talk about being reset, we will walk more intently of what the how looks like. But I'll tell you, it all falls under this one umbrella. How do you be reset when you meet Jesus? You run to him. You go to Jesus. You cannot meet Jesus if you are not with Jesus. I want to close this way. I just want to close that. I want us to think about this. I think Caleb mentioned the number 100, and he's probably right. There's probably 100 or more in this room. There's a lot of people in this room. It's so awesome. I'm so glad to see you tonight. What would it look like? Just imagine. What would it look like if everybody in this room met Jesus the way that Saul met Jesus? Just think to yourselves. What would it look like? Everybody in this room met Jesus the way that Saul met Jesus and responded the same way. That we responded that we would reset our lives to bring God glory, to make him known. Let me go a little further. And what would it look like in your home? What would it look like in your home, the way that you interact with your brothers and sisters? The ones that could get on your nerves. What would it look like to be reset the way that Paul was reset with your parents, the way that you respect them and do what they ask before they maybe even ask you to do it? What about your school? What would it look like for you to respect your teachers and talk highly of them, even when they might be not teaching you in the greatest way? Or the way, let me rephrase it, in the way that you want to be taught, right? What would it look like in your friend groups to be reset the way that Saul was reset? How would you talk to them differently? How would you talk about them differently? For those who work, what would it look like around your coworkers, or around your boss, or around the customers, for you to be reset the way that Saul was reset? Can I tell you what it would look like? The land would be radically changed. if 100 or so, probably 120 students left here and said, I'm going to be reset the way that Saul was reset, and I'm going to orient and live my life for God's glory and make him known. The land high, Magnolia, wherever else, Southwest, the land middle, South, Stetson Baptist Christian, it would look so different. And people would wonder, what happened? People would look at us the way that they looked at Saul in the synagogue and said, were you not the one that just yesterday was doing X, Y, and Z? And you can look at them and say, yes, but I'm different because I met Jesus. And I want that for you. Jesus wants that for you. He is calling you to himself. Not to radically change you in a bad way, but to radically change you in a way that matters. In a way that brings joy and peace into your life. Now, hey, if you have any questions about what that looks like, I'm going to be here. We're going to sing one more song before we close. But man, maybe it's a longer conversation that you just want to think about. We have a text 2 number. And that's just, man, if there are any questions that you have about being reset, about faith, and all you got to do is text it to that number. And we can figure out a time to talk about it. Hey, pray with me, and let's stand and worship as we close tonight.
Thank you for listening. We hope you have a great week and that you are a light for Jesus. Grace and peace.